Welcome back to Radicalize Me, the show where we learn how to cause trouble strategically. I interview activists on this show, and this episode is an interesting one because my guest is Jaya Sundaresh, an independent journalist from Schenectady, New York. Because journalism absolutely is, or at least can be, should be, activism. So am I saying Anderson Cooper and Rachel Maddow are activists? Absolutely not. But Jaya is. Jaya recently left some of the other work she was doing behind to focus on her new site, Them and Us Media, which you can find at themandus.substack.com. And I think the best way to give it justice is to just read you the About section from the site. Welcome to Them and Us. This is a newsletter about the people of the Capital Region of New York. This is Schenectady, Troy, Saratoga, and Albany. This will be a source of essays, reportage, interviews, and narrative stories about the people who live here and the things they are going through. You won't find any pretty stories about the latest bar to open on Lark Street. We're not going to wax poetic about the fancy hats they wear on opening weekend at Saratoga Racecourse, or compliment the entrees offered at the steakhouse at Rivers Casino. This is a region of great inequality, where people struggle to survive on lousy wages, where people are indebted to by generations of poverty and oppression. This is also a region with a radical history of anti-rent uprisings, mobilizations for racial and economic justice, and labor organizing. We intend to keep telling the stories that the big newspapers won't touch, and you can't get anywhere elsewhere. A note about the political nature of this newsletter. This is not objective, neutral journalism. Frankly, there's no such thing. We think alike. Anyone who tells you there is lying to you or are themselves interested in maintaining the status quo. This is activist, there we go, progressive, with a point of view journalism. We always will aim to make the powerful uncomfortable. And we will always aim to tell the truth, even if that upsets friends and allies. This is journalism that realizes that something is deeply broken in this society and this region, and that collective liberation is the only way we get free. And at the bottom here, we will offer everything for free as long as we can. If you feel like subsidizing this endeavor, you can always buy a paid subscription. Eventually, we'll get to the point where we can start paying contributors, but we're not there now. The only way to get there is to help support this endeavor, right? So there you go. And then you can put in your email, subscribe. And if you'd like to support in a more substantial way, get in touch at themandusmedia@gmail.com. Thank you, and we'll see you around. Right, so that's the, and that's, I think, the Hunter S. Thompson quote, too, I think it's journalism is only stuff that people don't want published. It's stuff that someone doesn't want published. Everything else is public relations. All right, so that About section is a good primer on what Jay and I talk about in this interview. It's important to remember that good journalism is not unbiased, because that doesn't exist. Journalism, just like other forms of activism, is just missing a lot of the voices that we need to change narratives and move us forward. With that, let's move forward to my interview with Jaya Sundaresh. All right. Are you, is my voice sounding normal, or getting any like doubling or anything?
No, it sounds good. Okay. What about mine?
I think you're good. All right.
Okay. And you're recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So is it, Jaya Sundaresh?
It's Jaya.
Jaya Sundaresh. All right. Cool. So yeah, I came across I think I found out about you from a tweet. Maybe someone retweeted it or something about you said you had just like quit all your jobs to do this like independent news site.
Yeah. I move fast, and I move, I'm going to say with intention, but yeah, I think that's fair. I was working on a political campaign. I was working on two political campaigns.
Oh, really?
One of the candidates dropped out because it just became untenable. And the other one was going really well, but I started the way it started was, I went to one of these protests in my hometown. Mm-hmm. And I realized people were, there was stories here that no one was telling. The big papers were not telling them. So I wrote a story about what happened in front of the police station in Schenectady, New York, you know, on that night. And I wrote it for my regular newsletter. Then I realized, you know, like we should have a different newsletter dedicated to the Capital Region of New York. So people could have news and radical views from the Capital Region. So I started that, started blowing up, started getting a lot of money. When I say a lot of money, I mean about $1,000 in a week. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That would be nice.
Yeah, and just small subscriptions and donors too. So, you know, we've picked up two collective members. So we're a team of three. We're still ironing that out, but we're gonna split the revenue down two ways, whatever it works. We're going to figure out how to pay people once we get going. We're switching to off Substack to a real website.
Okay.
We're going to migrate all of our subscribers. And, you know, it's not only that we are building money and resources and a body of work. It's that we are developing deep relationships in the community that we cover. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most fulfilling aspect of it to me.
Yeah, that's cool. So is that the goal, to keep it like this local thing so that that area has this kind of radical voice?
Yeah, we're going to stick to upstate New York. We're going to stick to the Capital Region. That'll be the core of our reporting. We can venture out. Probably in the future, you know, we'll venture out as much as we can. Probably won't get south of Westchester, probably won't get east or west of Syracuse or Buffalo or Rochester or anything like that. They have that's a totally different media market, but
yeah,
we're eastern upstate New York, let's call it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I would imagine that, you know, bigger, like more national news outlets would be interested in like hearing from someone like yourself who's, you know, on the ground there. So they don't have to go and like do all the work to figure everything out there.
Yeah.
They can say like, yeah, oh, someone's doing this.
True. I mean, that leads to like, you don't want parachute journalism. You don't want people flying in to do, you know, journalism from a distance. But
right,
close, you know, and you don't want journalism that's, you don't want exploitative models. You don't want people being exploited. You don't want people being paid a fraction of what they're worth with the freelance model. Although we will be paying contributors, we will hopefully be paying them a fair rate. And whoever works really well with us, we can bring on as a collective member eventually. That's the goal.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So what were you doing before, and what kind of sparked this change?
Sure. So maybe I'll just tell you the whole trajectory.
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, I was an activist before I was a journalist. I was a... you know, in about 2015, I was radicalized by Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow.
Okay.
And I came back to America because I was living in India at the time. And I fell into organizing for mass incarceration abolition. And so I did, and that was great. And we achieved some things. We got this kid out of prison who had been there for 9 years. His name was Marquise Dixon. He was sentenced to 9 years. He had been there for 3 years for stealing a pair of shoes at the age of 16.
Jeez.
Yeah. So we rallied. We pushed, and we filed amicus briefs, and we sprung him a little early, and so that was good. I was hired as a columnist at this local alt weekly called Them and Us. I'm sorry, my paper is called Them and Us. Right, they were called the Alt. Jeez. and so I was hired as a columnist. I started doing, you know, these lefty opinion columns. And then I realized reporting was a lot more fun. You know, like taking yourself out of the story was really fun, but you could still have a subtle point of view. You know, I'm really big on point of view journalism because all journalism is point of view journalism. Right. You know, it's just, if you're lying about not having a point of view, you're probably for the status quo. So that's me on my soapbox. But so I started doing cover stories for them. I started doing all sorts of in-depth coverage. It didn't work out. There was a culture clash there between me and the editor. So, you know, I was let go, and then shortly after, the paper collapsed. But I had decided to go to journalism school. So I left my town. I left Schenectady, Troy, Albany, the capital region, and I moved to New York 2 years ago, and I joined J School at CUNY, where I learned how to be a formal journalist. And I am still getting my degree because I am really not good at traditional shit. Like, I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. My weaknesses include not being great at following orders and doing what people want me to do. So I have a lot of lagging coursework. So I'm finishing that up.
Well, because it seems like you like went out and did a lot of things that would like get in the way of finishing. My wife was similar. She majored in political science, and she took, you know, I don't know, 7-8 years to finish her undergrad because she kept leaving to like work on campaigns and like do actual things. So
yeah. No, it's been a journey. You know, I keep coming up with new things to do, and my parents are just like, can you quit and just go be Andrew Cuomo's flack? Can you just get your degree and like work for Bill de Blasio? I'm like, Jesus Christ, how do you people know me? You know, like, yeah, I mean, you're either a crazy entrepreneurial person or you're lucky.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I came home about 2 months ago. I'm living with my partner in beautiful Troy, New York. And I started a newsletter a couple of months ago, just full of my own observations. It did pretty well. So now Them and Us, it's called Them and Us. Mm-hmm. And we're at Them and Us Media. We're at themandus.substack.com.
Okay.
So, yeah.
.substack. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point about, you know, all journalism is point of view journalism, mm-hmm. No matter what they say. And I think, I think one of people's like knee jerk criticisms of media right now is that it's like very point of view based. And I've always felt like that was a flawed, criticism. Like, I think there's a lot wrong with media, with like, you know, especially, you know, 24-hour news and that kind of stuff. But I don't think it's that they have a point of view. I think it's that, you know, there aren't enough voices like yours having a point of view that's put out there.
There aren't. There's also, I mean, there's point of view journalism. The problem is it's a solidly liberal and conservative. It's like a right end and center,
right,
aligned media. There's very few left voices, very few left voices. And, you know, the things that are considered uncontroversial in media are things that the mainstream agrees upon. Mm-hmm. So like support the troops. That's uncontroversial. Of course, I support the troops. I support the vets. I support anyone who signed up for a war and didn't know what the fuck they were getting into. But I don't support war.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's a spectrum of views that is considered off limits. There's a spectrum of views that's considered totally normal and non-controversial. And it depends on where you fall on the spectrum. So.
Right. That's something that, I do stand up, and that's something that I've always run into in my years doing that. Because people will ask me about like doing political comedy and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but like political doesn't just mean like because I had jokes about the election that's political. You know, it's like everyone.
Everything is political.
Yeah.
The personal is political. The mundane is political. What right. you choose to not to talk about is political.
Absolutely.
All political.
Yeah. And that's what I'm going for with this podcast, actually, because I'm not trying to do like a Joe Rogan thing where I have mm-hmm. you on one day and Jordan Peterson the next or something. It's like, no, I don't need to like be convinced of what is right and what should happen. You know, I'm all for like differing opinions within that, but it's
we're mission focused is the thing about them and us is that what comes first is the commitment to make a better world. And then comes the process of journalism.
Right.
I fully believe in objectivity when it comes to process. I think there's a analogous to the scientific method. There's a journalism method that you have to follow. You have to reach out to all parties. You have to do good faith efforts to reach out to all parties. You have to do a good faith effort to present everyone in the best light possible. You don't intentionally go after the worst light. You always, always, always check your biases at the door. Well, not at the door, but, you know, somewhere. you do the process, but you come with an agenda. My agenda is, I want a better world. Right. I think we can do better.
Yeah. And so you mentioned having a culture clash with, what was it, at the alt?
Yeah.
That you mentioned?
I mean, that was because I was a fucking mess, honestly, at that time. And also, like, it was a white newsroom, and I struggled a little bit with that. But also, I was like, I was just in a bad place. So like the culture clash was just me not really understanding. And as someone who recently had to let someone go, I feel a lot of sympathy for anyone who had to let me go in the past.
Okay.
because it's not a fun process and it's really not personal. It's really about culture fit. And I didn't fit into the culture there. I kind of think I don't fit into most cultures. So I had to go out and create one of my own.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, what is that like? Like, what were some of the issues with being the only non-white person in a writer's room?
You can be non-white and have not left views, but I had left views and I would sometimes come up hard against the mainstream opinion. I remember there was some, you know, Trump tweet or something that said, well, if we get rid of the Confederate statues, we need to get rid of the founding fathers as well because they owned slaves.
Right.
And everyone was laughing about that. And I said, he got a point. And that was like, and someone looked at me and they were like, I think it's a little different, Jaya. And I was like, no, I don't. You know, like Trump be right sometimes. What, you know?
Right. Yeah. He's accidentally, you know, right for the wrong reasons or whatever.
He's a broken clock.
Yeah.
You know, right twice a day. So.
You've mentioned covering the recent protests. That's a lot of what I've seen on your website. Is that what kind of sparked this? What kind of like got you?
Yeah. You know, it's a revolutionary moment and we were born out of this moment. I would like to say I think in terms of the style and the fast-paced movement and the feeling, this overwhelmingly exhilarating feeling like anything's possible, that we get directly from the people we are covering.
Right.
But we have a mission to go a lot broader and deeper. Mm. Not that the movement is right now, but we, you know, all of us, me and Cassie, my partner, Cassie is a former Daily Gazette reporter, which is like a newspaper it's a very traditional paper. And I mean, she loved her work. She loved her colleagues, was getting real sick of mainstream media. Right. So she has the experience. She's whip smart. She's got a political critique and, you know, she's doing what she's doing. I'm doing what I'm doing. We both have experience covering the area. We both know a lot about the area. We come to it with breadth and knowledge and depth. So we're going to cover, like, the piece I'm writing today is on the school board elections. You know,
yeah.
We're covering this woman who is a crossing guard who... who there's a local campaign to get a park named after her.
Okay.
You know, turn it from whatever Dutch slave master it was. Right. No, I don't know that. I'm not writing the story. It might be someone perfectly respectable, but they're trying to rename the park after her. You know, just like local stories that really matter. You know, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, that's cool. So tell me, like, how it's been in your area with the protests. Like, is it as big as kind of the stuff?
We had 11,000 people march in Troy,
wow.
Which is a city of 49,000 people.
Wow, that's a big.
So that was everyone in the capital region who cared in a pandemic came out.
Wow.
You know, they tried real hard to stymie the protest. It was funny. With one hand they gave, with one hand they took it away. You know, like, and to be fair, the Troy PD mostly tried to give. No, I can't say that because they went around a week before and told every business in downtown board up because looters are coming.
Right.
And every landlord downtown said, "Okay, we're gonna tell our tenants to board up." So they did that. And then there was this silly thing where everyone started painting the boards to beautify it.
Right.
And, you know, someone wrote something very serious, like, why are we painting these boards? You know, Troy PD gave out pizza during the march.
Okay.
And I'm really, you know, I think people were bought by it. I think people were mollified by it, but I think there's a vocal contingent that wasn't mollified by it. I think when we say the Black community, you know, follow the Black community, which we should do, I think that obscures the fact that there isn't one Black community.
Right.
There's a lot of internal disagreement going on, and we're seeing that play out in the leadership that has emerged. I wrote a piece called A Flower Blooms in Troy about the protests. And it was like this after dark moment of angry confrontation in front of the police building, the police department precinct. And, you know, there was an active debate going on between leaders about should we stay and confront and get arrested and get tear gassed and confront and be hardcore, or should we just go home?
Hmm.
And there was active disagreement and debate. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Dynamic
situation.
Yeah. So where would you fall on those kinds of questions from what you've seen? Like, is it, because I've heard that, like, it's, you know, I've heard people say, look, you're not really going to get much out of a fully peaceful protest. Like,
you can't
on some level. It's just this this point that I've been hearing is that, like, confronting the police, it's not about, like, you know, we're gonna go to war with the police. Like the, you know, the, we wouldn't win that war, but like to exhaust their resources and their time and energy is like an important part of getting any of this done. And I think the places that have seen the most change so far are the places that have done that.
They burned down the fucking precinct,
right?
And they got the PD disbanded.
Yeah.
I am trying not to take stances on intra-left debates because I don't believe, I will of course believe in working class revolution and, you know, socialism and Medicare for all and police abolition, but I will not take stances on things that are actively being debated on the left. I'm going to try to adhere to that. So I am going to try very hard to not reveal what I believe, but I will say that it's very true that the more you heighten the contradictions, the more you get.
Right.
And frankly, I don't think that's happening here. I think that's down to internal debate and disagreement and disorganization amongst the radical leaders, black-led leaders in this organization, in this area. I also think there's a strain of respectability politics going on. I also think that the working class is not entirely with abolish or even defund the police.
Right.
The working class, especially black neighborhoods and people I know, are not really down with it. So, I mean, this is a debate where we have yet to see how it will resolve, and but them and us will be there to cover it.
Yeah, that's great. And I think, it's at least right now, it is ultimately up to those movement leaders, like how it should proceed. Because, you know, anytime there's a pushback against the police, they're going to see the worst of the retaliation. So,
yeah,
I think that's totally fair. So I want to go back to what you said about how you kind of started with activism and you worked on this sort of prison reform project. How did you get involved with that and who were you working with?
So funny story. I mean, when I was in India, I was working after college. I moved to India to be with my family and work at a university. And I was doing all sorts of things that I didn't really like. And I was homesick as hell. So I threw myself into reading about home. And I read Michelle Alexander during that time. I was always a lib. I was always a radical or trying to be a radical. But and I always read deeply. But this was the first time a fire got lit under my ass really hard. And so when I came home, I was looking for whatever shitty job I could find. I was bartending at this really sus bar called Iffy's in downtown Albany. And across the street, there was something called the Albany Social Justice Center. And I just wandered in one day after my shift and I said, hey, I want to get involved. And Angelica, who was the executive person there, director there, invited me to a meeting of CAMI, which is Capital Area Against Mass Incarceration, which exists in sort of a zombie form now, but it doesn't exist anymore. It kind of fell apart. But I joined them. We organized for a while. I was on the steering committee for a while. We got Marquise out of prison. The thing about these organizations is they come together while it works and then they dissolve while it doesn't work. And more organizations have formed in the meanwhile in different cities. And, you know, there's one new organization called All of Us, which I'm really excited about. It's based in Schenectady. It's a Black-led youth organization. The ages are something like 18 or 16 through 45, you know? And it's you know, some of my good friends are in it and they are being real radicals and they're demanding concrete st- steps from the Schenectady and Capital Region Troy departments, police departments. And, you know, it's just fascinating to watch. It's weird not being part of it on the activist side. Mm-hmm. It's weird taking a little bit of distance. But we're still very much part of the community, and we cover the community.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so you said these groups tend to dissolve when, I forget how you phrased it, but these groups tend to, like, go away after they, like, do their job? Do you think they should have
institutional longevity.
Yeah. How
they don't.
Yeah. How would that, like, what would need to change for that to happen, you think?
People need to get along better.
Okay.
People can't be hating on each other like that. Also, I think structure is good. Hierarchies are good.
Mm. Yeah.
Democratic hierarchies are good.
Right.
It's Joe Friedman's "The Tyranny of Structurelessness." If you've ever read that essay, it's written by Joe Friedman, who was a legendary second wave feminist. If you have amorphous, loose democratic collectives or collectives in general, hierarchies will naturally emerge, but they will not be defined. They will not be explicated. They will not be explicit.
Right.
So some big honcho will rise and will have the means and the smarts to manipulate other people. I'm not saying that happened in CAMI, but I've seen it happen time and time over again.
Right.
And I've seen it fell many an organization. If you have a dictator, a little tin pot despot, you should be able to identify the structures holding them in place and depose them.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I remember that was kind of the frustrating thing about the Occupy Wall Street thing, because I think they were at such a fever pitch, and it was like, it really seemed like they had established something. But I think the people at the center of that were so insistent on their, like, not being a leader that it just went away, sort of.
I mean, it couldn't have lasted very long. The nature of what they were doing was so antithetical. It was a beautiful moment, and I think it clarified the politics. It heightened the contradictions, as I like to say. And it provided the start of a lot of different leaders.
Right.
Sarah Jaffe writes about this a lot in her book, which the name of which is escaping me. But she even traces the trajectory of very many people who came out of Occupy, who went on to run for election, who went on to be DSA people, who went on to be media people, who went on to, you know, like, it provided the start of a lot of things. I mean, one of the philosophies we use at Feminist is that nothing ever goes to waste.
Right.
We will go out to a protest. We will take notes. We will not report necessarily, but we will make connections. We will learn about people. We'll gather context for future pieces. Nothing ever goes to waste. I don't think Occupy went to waste. I don't think these movements that come together and fall apart go to waste. Oh, I think we learned something.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I've discovered in doing this show and researching and stuff is that a lot of the big social changes that we know of are at the end of a trail paved with failures. You know, it's just court cases that didn't go the way they wanted. It just, like, over and over, stuff kind of not working out, but moving the needle in a way that was maybe not even detectable at the time, but definitely does. So did you grow up in Schenectady or in India?
Not in India. Okay. I was born in Minnesota, moved to Schenectady as a 2-year-old. My parents unwillingly, non-consensually moved me to Connecticut in high school, middle school. So I was pretty pissed about that. So yeah, I did high school in West Hartford, but then I went to Canada for college. I went to McGill University, studied poli sci, went to India for a bit because my mom was living in India at the time. And I was, you know, just looking to do a radical change. Mm-hmm. And then when I came home, I was like, I'm not going to Connecticut. I don't like Connecticut. I've always had wonderful associations with Schenectady. Mm-hmm. It's always been like the golden dream land. I don't think anyone's ever said that about Schenectady before. But it, you know, it felt like home in a way that nothing else did. So
yeah,
my best friend still lived in Schenect, so I moved home.
Nice. Yeah, you said West Hartford you lived in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Westport.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, yeah. Not super close, but
no,
Connecticut
but
nonetheless.
Close enough.
Yeah. Yeah, my parents moved us there. I was born in Brooklyn, and we lived in Queens until I was like 7 or 8.
Ugh, that sucks, and you had to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought about moving back, but it's just so expensive.
It is expensive. Where are you now?
I'm in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not cheap either.
It's not. It's definitely cheaper. Yeah, we've found there's still neighborhoods in Boston where you can, you know, split something and it's reasonable. Yeah, I lived in Philly for 6 years after college.
It's a good town.
Which it's cool. It was definitely a good place to go right after college. Because it's just so it's so cheap. Like that's talk about like places with neighborhoods that are still cheap.
I'm paying $500 for this right now.
Yeah, that's bedroom. Wild.
I mean, I'm splitting it with my partner, but not bad.
Yeah, I lived with 3 friends in Philly when we first got there, and we were each paying like $375 for like this giant
Jesus
place.
Christ.
Like
it was. Jesus
it's an interesting,
Christ.
Interesting place, but felt like I outgrew it a little bit. I forget if you said how much time you spent in India when you went.
Year.
Just a year. Okay.
And so what I learned from it was that I really missed the States.
Yeah. Did you witness anything there that, around like Modi and I forget what the group he's part of is called, and like
the BJP. I mean, not really. I was doing a lot of local work. I witnessed a lot of misogyny and patriarchy in my family, directed towards me, directed to my cousins. That really rankled. That was the number one thing I think that really clarified things for me was women's freedom. Yes, of course, there was a lot of casteism, Islamophobia, classism in India. It's no better than here, no worse than here.
Really? Okay. Yeah, that would have been next question.
I think. Yeah. Well, it's worse in different ways, better in different ways.
Yeah, I would imagine it presents a little differently.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
Okay. So getting back to the protests, you mentioned a little bit. What have you seen from the police there besides giving out pizza?
That's interesting. You know, the police are, I don't know if they are playing a double game intentionally or if they I think they genuinely believe that they are doing the right thing. We've seen police chief Eric Clifford, who I think is a really good guy. All cops are bastards. Not this guy. I think the institution of policing is deeply problematic. There are good people who do it. Clifford believes in the job. I think, he took it on himself to kneel with the protesters. And a lot of people across the country have been disparaging of kneeling with protesters. But what I think is interesting here is that the protesters asked him to kneel, and he did it. It wasn't to mollify, or maybe it was to mollify, but the protesters were in control there, I think. I think other PDs are playing a cynical game. I think they're handing out pizza. I think they are, you know, preparing the tanks and the tear gas canisters while they mollify and hand out pizza and paint up boarded up buildings. And, you know, this is an area that has murdered. These are police departments that have murdered people.
Right.
We have deaths on our hands. We have injuries on our hands. We have assaults. We have, we've got a lot going on in this area. So.
Yeah. You made an important distinction there when you said that all cops are bastards, but there are good people who do it. Like, I think that's one of the things that people who are pushing back on, like, defund the police or all cops are bastards, whatever. People who push back on that, I think, need to hear that, because I've had that conversation a couple of times where I've said to someone, like, look, no one's saying you are inherently a bad person if you became a cop. Like, it seems like a dumb thing to have to say, but it's like, yeah, I mean, people just haven't heard these ideas before and they're not sure what you mean.
We got to get out of the habit of individualizing and personalizing everything. You know, we're talking about collectives here. We're talking about an institution that is deeply problematic and deeply harmful. Mm. But the individuals who make it up can be decent people. I think that's true. People might call me a liberal for saying that, and they might be right. But I mean, sure, whatever. But, like, you know, I have a very good friend on the police department in Schenectady, and he is beloved in the community. Okay. He really is. And if you don't acknowledge that, you're not doing your job as a journalist or an activist.
Right.
He has been there. He's watched young activists grow up. He's been there for the community day one. He's in the wrong profession.
Right.
He has faith in an institution that does not work. Mm. He's almost there. He's 90% of the way there. I'm just waiting for him to one day quit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, is like, you know, those good cop stories you hear about, most of them get fired, you know, like, it's, and that's the thing, is I don't want, I would like for good people, cops, to remain cops. That would be great. And if they could do goodness through their job, that would be awesome. But, you know, that's kind of not what's happening. So that's the
conversation. I mean, honestly, I would like them to quit. I'd like them to do something else. I'd like them to become social workers.
Yeah.
Even DSS and social workers are, you know, that's a problematic institution too, but, like, better than policing, better than carceral solutions. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a good CEO, though. Fuck them.
As good what?
As a good correctionals officer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, I'm joking. There might be. Who knows?
Yeah. So is that a diverse area around Albany?
Very, very diverse. We have a lot of Black and brown communities up here. You know, upstate New York is stereotyped as lily white, and some areas are.
I went to college in Ithaca.
Did you go to Cornell or Ithaca?
Ithaca.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know, we've got our rural areas. It's a little microcosm of America. We've got our urban areas. We've got our suburbs. Got income inequality. We've got, you know, good schools, bad schools, and property taxes determine what school is good and what school is bad.
Right.
You know, I would say it's a purple area, not a blue area, not a red area.
Right.
Falls down racial lines. There was a great piece on Troy a couple of years ago in BuzzFeed about a lot of economic refugees coming up from the city, Black and brown communities, and the conflict with the local PD and the local political establishment. That's a good piece. So that clarifies.
What was that one called?
I'll send it to you. It's on BuzzFeed. I'll send you the link.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And one thing, can I just say that about something we're trying to do with this community media initiative?
Yeah.
We recognize, I mean, both me and Cassie, who run Them and Us, Cassie is a white woman. I am a brown woman. I'm an Indian American woman. Neither of us are black. That's not good. I mean, I think we both have, blind spots, somewhere, that we are pretty good about confronting and putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations and learning, but we are also looking for someone, from an underrepresented community in journalism who can grow with us. We're looking to create a position, not a position, a place on our board, a place on our collective, for someone from an underrepresented community to grow, to learn journalism if they don't know how to do journalism. We can teach them. Journalism's easy. Politics are hard. Mm-hmm. So we want someone who's young, hungry to learn, hungry to work, hungry to act, hungry to cover, someone with passion, someone with the politics, someone with a critique of media as usual. So just putting that out there, if that's you in the Capital Region or elsewhere and you want to move here, we can't pay you much, but hopefully we'll grow into something that we'll be able to pay you something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And if you can get an apartment for $500, then it's not too bad.
You can get an apartment for less.
Yeah, there
you can get a room for less. Let's just put it that way.
So. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's tough, obviously with everything that's happening, I thought I should be elevating these voices with my podcast. And then you realize, like, oh, because of the nature of this country and how I grew up, and it's like, I don't know that many black people. And if I'm just cold, like, I've reached out to several people about being on the show, got a couple of responses, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know how it feels on the other end that suddenly people are interested in talking to you.
Yeah.
And if they look at my feed. Yeah.
It's like suddenly we're sexy, you know?
Right. So you definitely don't want to come across that way, but you do want to, do what you're doing, which is reaching out in that way.
Embedding yourself. I grew up in a white context too.
Yeah.
Not so much Schenectady. Schenectady was diverse, but West Hartford was very, very white.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was mixed, but it was segregated. And as a weird brown girl, I got classified with the whites.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had to bootstrap my way, not through white culture only, but through black culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. It's, if you do it in an authentic, good, deep, non-tokenizing way,
right,
you can learn a lot. I think anyone can learn anything. It's just about unlearning your biases.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about how 2 weeks ago, I was different. I was less radical 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, a Bernie bro. Like, this, like, defund the police, abolish the police stuff is stuff that I had heard people say before, but really didn't understand, didn't think much of it, and suddenly it's on everyone's mind.
Because I came to everything. I came to radical politics through abolishing the carceral system first. I read Angela Davis and Michelle Alexander and Alex Vitale, and my brain and my heart was set on fire. And I came to Bernie Sanders and a class analysis and Eugene Debs and socialism writ large later.
Mm.
I think the two can very easily go hand in hand. In fact, should go hand in hand. But I just find it so interesting that there's so many people who are radicalized by class politics who haven't come around yet. That's suspect to me in some ways. It's at the worst suspect, at the best, just give them more time,
Yeah, that's a very important point. And I think on some level, I understood that. I in the past several years, I definitely saw that, like, there are identity politics reductionists who ignore class. Mm-hmm. And I sort of understood that maybe, like, Bernie, for example, was a little class reductionist, didn't quite understand racial justice and identity.
It's not in his right. instincts.
And I think it didn't really hit me over the head until he came out with that plan where part of it was like pay the police more or something. And I was like, dude, that's not what anyone is saying right now. So no. This is a very Democratic Party loyalist plan that you have right here. And that's why I'm trying to do this and, ask people like you, how did you do it? And have you, hopefully people are listening who will hear that too. And that's how,
The Holy Trio, Alex Vitale's The End of Policing. End of Policing. I have it right here. It's all sold out everywhere, but the ebook's being given out for free.
Oh, wow.
Read Angela Davis, Our Prison's Obsolete. It's a little book. It's very good. Read Michelle Alexander, The New Jim Crow. And you'll be right where I am.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. They're on my list. Is there anything else that you are open to get out here?
Yeah. I'd like to just say that, community media, media by and for the people is something that challenges the very foundation of journalism as we know it. People try to do community media, but they don't change the structure of the ethical considerations of journalism. Mm. They're not doing community journalism. They're doing something oppressive. All media, all local media is community journalism. All of it.
Yeah.
It's just that most local journalism is community media for white suburbanites.
Right. So like your local news channel or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. We're doing community media for the working class. We're doing community media for brown and black marginalized communities. And we're doing media for the working class white communities there are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're about.
That's great. Well, I appreciate that you're doing that work. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Anytime. And if you need any names or you need any connections or anything, just hit me up.
Oh, yeah.
I'll put you in touch with people.
I definitely do. Thank you. That would be awesome. Okay, great. Yeah, I'll let you go there if that's all. Theminus.substack.com, right? That's your...
Theminus.substack.com. We're on Twitter. We're at Them and Us Media. And on Facebook, we're at Facebook/Them and Us Media. You can find me on Twitter at shutupjaya.com. At shutupjaya. Oh, I'm fried. And that's because people tell me to shut up. And I thought it was funny. And I've made it my handle. And now people tell me to shut up for real. And I was like, I didn't think this through.
That's very fitting. So, yeah.
It's too late now, though.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Very cool.
My plugs.
Yeah. All right. Great. It was good to meet you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stay in touch.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
All right. I hope you all enjoyed that. Please check out Jaya's work and support if you can. You can follow her on Twitter at ShutUpJaya. J-A-Y-A. You can follow the show on Facebook.com/radicalizeme. And Twitter at Joe_Messina, M-E-S-S-I-N-A. Please rate and subscribe on Apple Music. That would really help us out. See you next time.